Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Provincial State of Mind with myself, Owen Harrison, Jeff Neville and Tom Savage. We're back to the normal podcast focused on all four Irish provincial sides in both the URC and European competitions. We discuss what happened the previous weekend, what we can expect from each province in our upcoming games, as well as any major off-field news. But because this is the Rugby World Cup is on at the moment, we will have to discuss some of that. So before we get into that, what have you been up to this week, guys? Jeff?
I just got a flashback at the time that you pronounced our names wrong in the intro after doing maybe 40 intros. You called Tom yeah. Sandwich.
Tom Sandwich.
Yeah. Tom Sandwich, yeah.
For some reason there, just as you were doing the intro and you were like, with my cell phone, Harrison, Tom Sandwich. I was like, do you remember that time that Tom, or that he called us the wrong names, even though we're 40 weeks into this? That was fun.
I was humiliated. I was humiliated by that.
I did get the cease and desist letter, yeah.
What was I at this weekend? I spent Friday excited. I spent Saturday tapping a foot. I spent Saturday night crying. And I spent Sunday night having a really good day up in the local rugby club up in Balbriggan. It was a very busy day. It was a very good day. And then I watched South Africa, France, Sunday night, which is pound for pound, one of the most bananas opening halves I've ever seen, if not of all time. And then one day, you know, the sun came up, the world kept turning, birds kept singing, you know,
rain, though.
Most of them, they kept singing weird songs.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand the lyrics. I was like, these will never
catch on. It's like that really cool song that the All Blacks fans have. Like, it's like, All Blacks. All Blacks, I don't even know how they memorize that. But yeah, that's how it felt on the Monday morning.
No, the world kept turning. And look, here we are. URC is around the corner. I'm probably jumping the gun, getting too into rugby too soon. I've noticed that Owen, however, has been busy on another podcast talking about Lidl.
Slapper.
I am whoring myself out to every podcast available and that's willing to accept me.
Didn't even hide it. I wouldn't mind, but I wouldn't mind. But last week, or 2 weeks ago, after we got some nice pastries from the good folks over at Lidl, he thanks Aldi last week on this podcast, and then drops Lidl on a different podcast. So he's just leaving me and Tom in the lurch, and has just gone off somewhere else looking to get his Lidl fix in a different place.
I'm all about the pastries. It's not. It's just all about the pastries. I'm waiting for Lidl to come up, Trump, and send out more of this. I'm willing to continue to plug them and harass them.
Really, I think, Owen, you can just walk into any Lidl, pick up the pastries, and just walk out the door.
Yeah, I genuinely say no one will stop you.
I like the idea of the guy coming in the van with the box of them.
Well, that was
to
cool,
my front door. That's
just
the cool
tell
bit.
Him, as you're walking out, it's okay. I'm with the podcast.
You know the way that the alarm goes off and the door is shut? You? That could happen.
Just play the intro to the podcast.
Then they'll get it.
What you could do is, you know the way sometimes Lidl sell like little clothes? They sell like the t-shirts or the jumpers. They have shoes and a hat up the middle aisle. What you could do is just buy a little jumper. And then you can take whatever you want home. And yeah, people,
it's, like, it's okay. I'm actually with Lidl. I am of Lidl.
I am Lidl.
It'd be like the thing in The Simpsons, you know, the wallet inspector. I could just walk in there in the Lidl gear and just say pastry inspector.
I was away for the weekend. I was in Killarney on Saturday for the, it was for my fiance's birthday. And
happy birthday.
Got to watch the game in a lovely hotel, and I was very drunk, so I was not in any position to be kind of putting out analysis on the game because I was hammered. But I had to watch the game quiet in the room because obviously we had our little girl with us, so I was there after, you know, that 4 or 5 point buzz. And again, I'm a total lightweight now. So I was just there watching the game unfold, just like, be quiet, don't shout, don't be roaring, don't celebrate too much, or swear loudly enough, It's a weird way to watch a game. I will say that.
I actually constricts you. That I made a mistake on Friday night. So
did you?
Yeah, I did. I went out Friday night. I forgot about this actually. And I had maybe 5 points, right? And that was the mistake.
Dangerous amount.
That was the mistake. Because
the whole dangerous number of points.
Yeah. And like the whole next day just couldn't wait to go to bed.
Yeah.
That was my mistake. Yeah. I only had 5. Like that's not an obscene amount of points.
But like once you're north of 35, 5 points might as well be fucking 9 points.
Don't know how to tell you this, but I'm not north of 35.
Stop, you are not.
I'm not even 35. I'm south of 35.
What?
But, yeah.
Fuck's sake.
Old man Neville isn't even 35.
Jesus Christ. Keep forgetting a fucking number.
Yeah.
I'm probably something stupid like 32 or something.
I'm 20.
And I was actually
this is depressing now.
I was not sick on the Sunday, but you know, you're just seedy. That's all I was.
Yeah, on Sunday. Yeah. Rusty, like.
And when I came back from Killarney, I was like, my beard at that point had gotten very thick, right? So I was like, because I was seedy, I need to trim this. So I went into the bathroom, got my beard trimmer, and I started trimming. Now I do it out in the yard. Because I don't want to be getting hairs all over the toilet or bathroom, whatever. So then the battery goes on the trimmer. And because I was so seedy and because I had half my face at this point, half trimmed, like all over the place, I said, you know what? Fuck this. Fuck it. I'm just going to shave the rest of the fucking thing off. That's because that's how seedy I was. So I get my razor from it, and I normally use it for the top of my head and use it all over my head and went full egg mode, and I thought, brilliant, great, this is what I wanted. So I go into the living room with my young little daughter there, who has never seen her father in this state. She did not recognize me. She bawled crying.
Really?
She bawled crying. And I was just like, what a fool. What a big egg-headed fool I am.
I was going to say, you look very smooth. You look very...
It's very smooth. Billiard ball. Yeah. You know, I just got that whole bowling ball look about me. Eggman. Yeah. Very much. I regret it, but it is what it is. But you know what? I'm thinking of keeping it this way because I figure if you're a ball guy, you've got two options. Ball guy with a beard or cue ball. There are so many ball guys with a beard. Even on Twitter.
Yeah,
you need to look at Sam Larner.
Look at the whole kind of coaching team.
All of the beers. So I'm thinking the Eggman look, I might stick with it for a while. I might. And just see how it goes.
I think it suits you.
I don't know about that.
Makes you look slightly north of 35 rather than north.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just thinking if I keep it up, maybe I can kind of make it my thing. Just like, okay, I'm bald. Yeah, I'm in rugby. I'm an Irish guy and I'm bald. There's so many of those guys. But I'm not a guy with a beard. So to keep Wood sort of look, I can tangle with him for brand recognition.
Timeless. Yeah. He looks the same now that he looked 30 years ago.
Yeah, I'm figuring I can maybe try and get away with that as well. So yeah, so that's what I'm going to try and do. But I definitely regretted it when the girl was just like, who the fuck are you?
Who's this man? In my kitchen. Like,
she only warmed up to me, I'd say, later on, like a good 4 hours or 5 hours later, where she was just like, I figure he must be somebody I know because he's still here.
Still looking at you suspiciously.
Still looking. Like, But yeah, so that's where I'm kind of at. That was what I was doing over the weekend. There was a game on as well. I think I made reference to it there.
There was a game.
Yeah.
Was it Wales-Argentina, was it?
Yeah, I was watching that. That was in pint one and two. I was watching the end of that.
What a couple of Welsh lads actually in that one. Jesus.
In the hotel, and they were upset. But I think my pain was worse afterwards because I expected to win my game.
I'm going to give at least some credit to Gatland, because getting Wales from where they were to a World Cup quarterfinal is a hell of an achievement.
It actually is. Seriously.
Oh, like if any Welsh fan looks at that and says, like, you know, this was a failure, like, it makes no sense. What was there before that was a failure. Like, the Six Nations was poor. And even then, like, you could say, well, he's only taken over, etc. But, like, to get to a quarterfinal, Fiji, to lose it, Australia.
Close enough, yeah.
Close enough game in a quarter. Could be, what are you, like, a couple of kicks away from a semi-final. Yeah. No shame in that.
No, none at all. And then, of course, we had Saturday night, the main event, Ireland, New Zealand.
Won't start playing until this Saturday night.
Yeah, no. You've jumped first. You've sold us out to Lidl, and now you've jumped ahead. Now you're selling out main event Munster.
I said it was the main event on Saturday night.
You have no loyalty.
I told you, I'm willing to take pastries from anyone. If maybe World Cup wants any pastries, I will take them. Ireland beaten. To be honest with you, as I said last week, I did not see this coming. Fair play to the Kiwis.
Yeah,
I thought tactically they absolutely outsmarted Ireland.
I thought we shit the bed in the first 20 minutes.
First sort of quarter, fucking
fine point on it.
First quarter killed us.
We came out looking nervous, out of the moment, looking at the lads in the tunnel, even in the anthems, getting ready, everything just looked off. And the opening 20 minutes of the game, I've never seen this Irish team, well, it's not never, but like, they haven't played that badly in that 20 minute block for God only knows how long. They were looked totally unlike themselves.
I mean, like if you look at it, like, how did New Zealand win, or what did they do about it? Like, I thought, as I said, tactically it was a masterclass in terms of, you took away all the platforms nearly Ireland want to play with. So, like, the line out again was a problem, and it started off as a problem. And I think there's been a lot of talk that, you know, oh, Ireland fixed it, and that's not something that I agree with. I think what happened was Ireland triaged the line out, and what they were able to do was shorten it or go to the front or go to a secure ball with O'Mahony again, and they weren't able to get it working, because all they were willing to do was to allow New Zealand to put more back rows, more defenders into the line and shut down Ireland's phase play. And it was just a way of restarting the game. It wasn't actually an attacking platform anymore.
One of the biggest compliments, I think, to the New Zealand defensive lineout was when Ian Henderson made the mark for them. Do you remember that? He kind of stepped across and made the mark.
And they scored on the next possession.
Yeah. That was a real fucking...
I thought as well that New Zealand, their use of possession was so efficient. They actually gave Ireland nothing to work with on defensive transition. And normally Ireland are very good at generating opportunities in that. But they just gave Ireland nothing. They kicked really conservatively. But their use of possession was very conservative as well. Like, they didn't overplay. There was a few mistakes inside the first 5 minutes, I think, they made. But other than that, they were very, very efficient and gave Ireland just very little to work with. Kicked the ball long. Ireland were constantly starting from way back down the field. It was just a really good performance. But at the same time, Ireland really underperformed. I thought some key guys underperformed for the full game, but certainly in that first 20 minutes where, geez, like that strike play off the line. When have you seen this Irish team do that? When they hit it up the middle and then all of a sudden lads are looking confused. Like, they don't know what the next play is.
That's the Will Jordan try, isn't it? You're on about.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the defensive, the offensive line out in the first half. It's where Ireland ran a line out off the top of the line out off Bundy. Johnny Sexton was behind him, almost like he was expecting to get the pass but didn't get it. He kind of had that look, kind of going, what? And then on the next phase, it looked like there was confusion over what pod is next, where's Sexton, what's the next move. And they ended up passing the ball to Josh van der Fleer, who was just got back up off the ground after clearing a ruck, and then he got turned over.
And
there was no ruck support. When does that happen to this Ireland team?
Well, I will say this, it happens to this Ireland team when you put them under pressure at the breakdown. Because as good as Gibson Park is, and he is fantastic when Ireland are front football, he is so quick and he gets the ball out to Sexton as the decision maker. He gets that ball out quickly to him. But when you put Ireland under pressure at the breakdown and you make Gibson Park make decisions, then it becomes slow, it becomes erratic, and Ireland run into problems. And that was found out again here. The other one that was found out, like the two halfbacks had terrible games. Like there was lots of talk about how good Johnny Sexton is, and he is one of the best players to ever play for Ireland. But in this game, it showed that he was a 38-year-old coming to the end of his career.
To be fair, he did look like he aged overnight in this game, where he looked his age in this game, where previously he hadn't. But I think New Zealand did a good job of making it very uncomfortable for him. His movement, though, in this game looked very constricted. And look, it's not Johnny's fault. It's not any one player's fault. Like, it was a very tight margin game. Ireland could have won. Like, there was two, maybe outside the bad 20 start in the first quarter, there were a few occasions when Ireland could have won. Like, Beauden Barrett, like, that's a 1 in 1,000 play there that he makes to save that try. But.
Or Jordy Barrett,
yeah. I looking at that, at the same time, I don't think you can just write it off. Oh, well, look, narrow loss. It happens. I think that this Irish team should have won. I think that if they played New Zealand again next week, they would win. But that, I think, paints to some failings that there are there when it comes to like the serious knockout rugby for this Irish team. And I think that we spoke before about what we expected from Ireland would be a good World Cup.
Winning it.
And to go out in the quarterfinal, look, great game. New Zealand were really good. That still is a failure. And that's a big disappointment for me, because this was one I felt that we were good enough to win and we didn't. And I think that there are questions to be answered. Like, why is the line out? Why does the line out crumble? Why does that happen? Like, it's happened against South Africa. It happened here. Like, that was a massive strength. Teams are taking it away. We can control that. Why does that crumble? Why do we play more or less the same team for every game in this World Cup? I know why, but why is that? Other teams rotate. We don't. Why is that? There's a number of things I think that we can ask about this team, but like, and that does not take away from the fact that they were brave as fuck. They went out in their shields. Nobody can question their effort. Nobody can question their desire. But it felt that this was a bit of a reckoning, I think, that you live by the sword, you die by the sword to a certain extent. Our cohesion, our the unity that we've played with this group, like they played, like this team that are, you know, you can name this Irish team off by heart. They've played almost every big game that's been available in the last 2 years. And they came into this World Cup, they played pretty much every game. And it's like, at a certain point, that's your team and you can't really alternate out of it. And I think that in itself ended up being both a strength in that it got us to number one in the world, but a weakness at the same time in that we're the most analysed team in the world. So New Zealand have more than enough to attack certain points, whereas I think the likes of South Africa are less analysable than what we would be. But I think that's just, I would disagree with people who are just like, oh, call this team a bunch of failures or whatever else. There's lots of that in social media. I don't agree with that. But at the same time, I don't think that there's no questions to answer either.
Well, I mean, it's going to be what? You're looking at a team who's come in as number one in the world. They had a route that they probably wanted at the start of it based on the draw. And they've underperformed. And like you just can't get away from that.
I don't usually watch the post-game stuff. Because the games are so late as well, and I'm an old man at heart, if not body. But the there was one bit in this one, I think I just heard it while I was sitting there kind of numb, and it was Rob Kearney, and I think the question was put to him, and it was like, how do Ireland recover or something like that, and he was just like, for what? Like, this was what we were here for. Like, and that for me, it was very, like, before the Six Nations, we were talking about a Grand Slam, and we were like, you know, anything but a win in a Grand Slam would be a failure. You know, they went and they got the slam. Anything but a grand slam would be a failure, and they went and got the slam. And heading into this World Cup, like, there's no like sense of plucky Irishman. There's no sense of underdog. It was, we were going to this to win. We lost. And like, it doesn't make you a bad team overnight. And I think that's important to stress.
But absolutely.
At the same time, you're kind of like, listen, that's why we were here. Like, it was, we were here to win it. We were here to win a World Cup. That's been taken away. I think the, like, coming into this game, you know, there was the whole narrative of the quarterfinal chokers, etc. Again, you can't really escape that narrative now that you've been lost, that you've lost the quarterfinal. But
you can't refute it. Like,
yeah, but at the same time, I don't think this is a game where you can look at the first quarter, yeah, and say that got away from them. And you can absolutely argue about the first quarter, because I mean, like, they had very little possession. When 13-0 down, there was a couple of penalties in there that you're kind of thinking, there was an offside penalty, I think. Was that the first penalty given?
It was, like, I mean, Andrew Porter ripping a guy while he was on the ground.
Oh, is that it? Okay.
It was a mad play.
Like, kind of penalties where you're just like, that was unnecessary. And even when New Zealand failed to exit twice properly, you're kind of thinking, okay, there's still something here. But bar that first quarter, I think there was a couple of moments for me. Like, there was when Jordy Barrett held up that try, you're kind of thinking, okay, there's another chance coming.
Hit them on the next one.
But then when you dropped the restart, I was like,
felt like game over.
It was very, very depressing. Like, suddenly I was just like, okay, this could well be game over. And the second one, I think, was during that 37 phase set near the end. And I'm not blaming him, by the way, in any sense or form, because, like, I mean, I'd be knackered as well. But Tadhg Byrne got a pop off, I think it was off 9, or it could have been off 10. And he just kind of stood there. He kind of just looked around.
Yeah, nothing.
And just kind of went to fend and was like, I'll set this up, but that's all I can do. And, like, I understand, I completely get it. Like, your 37 phases is, that's an insane number of phases. But I think that as well, that phase, when he got that ball, I was like, it's going to take something very special here now to get over the line. And last week, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about, you know, having that feeling when there's a 10 minutes left in a big game or something, or a few moments left in a big game, and you get to certainly enjoy it. I think that was, even though Ireland were only a score behind, I think New Zealand, off those couple of moments, were probably thinking to themselves, like, we have this. Like, they were certainly buoyed by it anyway. But they were the couple of moments for me anyway that I was just like, we need something big here.
I think for me, like, you talked about the sort of the lack of energy in the last 10 minutes. It was the game time. Like, what was it? It was nearly 42 minutes of ball and play. You had, and then on top of that, you had Ireland making what I would call silly mistakes. Like, they were punting long from marks in their own thing before the team was set in their own 22. They were keeping ball in play. That all suited the Kiwis. It all suited the Kiwis in terms of what they were doing. I just felt overall the Kiwis had their strike place. They had that lovely Will Jordan one, which I think Richie Mwanga said afterwards, the ball was meant to be passed inside. I think Ireland actually read it too well. They knew what was coming.
And Dan Sheehan didn't make, for me, he's a great player, but to me, he has to back Tadhg Byrne and Finlay Beelam to close the door on his inside shoulder. He had to hit Mwanga, but he just hung in the middle. And they picked him up.
He was waiting for the pass. I think he read it. He was waiting for the pass. And Mwanga just played what heads up rugby.
But he has to back the guys inside. He has to back Byrne and Beelam. And they actually closed the door. They actually closed the door on Jordan. But they obviously couldn't tackle him because he didn't have the ball. But, like, they were there.
You can't do that.
You actually can't do that. I made sure to shout that quite loudly at my sleeping child.
It's one of the laws. Yep. I don't know if many people know it, but you can't, if you don't have the ball, I have to leave you alone.
It's a silly rule, but they have to stick to it. They're small margins. I just feel that Ireland, they were just taken off their usual game. Like, and part of that comes down to clever work by New Zealand. But I think as well, Ireland's bad start leaked into the rest of the game. Yeah. So we were constantly chasing.
You're also trying to chase 13 points. And like, it was like they get closer, they concede a try, then they scored again. But like every time they scored and conceded, every time that seesaw happened, it was like, you're a point closer, you're 2 points closer. But just 13 was too much.
And actually, and like it was a killer in that opening 20 minutes. Just like, I remember saying it quite, you know, quietly to herself, it's happening again.
Well, I was very much the first.
2019 as well.
The first kickable penalty. Was it 6-0 when we got the first kickable one?
Yeah, and we drove it down the line.
Take a point.
Yeah, the thing is, Scotland did the same thing last week. And they were slated for it. And again, I think that this Irish team are very good when there's another opportunity. Like this Irish team is great at series and league play, like in the Six Nations. I think it seemed at times that we were either thinking, look, we'll always get another chance against these guys when we were driving down the line, when there was kickable points. But then it felt like later in the game that we were thinking, we're never going to get the ball again.
Talking about margins though, like, I mean, margins, if Kelleher got one more roll, this is a different conversation.
And if he just stayed on his feet for a heartbeat longer, it's like, a try.
They're the margins.
But they're the margins at this level of the game. I just think Ireland will just be sick.
I hate margins.
One thing before we wrap up the conversation on New Zealand, I just want to give huge credit to the New Zealand scrum for what they did to Andrew Porter. It was absolutely fantastic. They actually took the step out. They pulled him round so that he was actually going further sideways and then took a step to the left. And they got three scrum penalties out of, what, four scrums?
I felt that he was unfairly done on the first one.
Yeah, probably.
That was a bit that could have gone either way.
Yeah, but they were definitely targeting it. What they were doing was not legal, right? But what they were doing was accentuating the picture to Barnes that Porter is going at the angle. And all Barnes was seeing was Porter coming in.
Was an arse coming out. Yeah.
Plus, Porter had his elbow down a lot. And that, like, elbow down is one of the biggest things they're looking for.
Bad picture.
They absolutely, I would bet my mortgage that they had in their prep, they were all on to the referee. Porter's coming in at the angle. Look at Porter's hips. That's all that happened pre-match in terms of the scrum. They were focused on that. They painted the picture and they presented it lovely to them. They literally just put it on there on a plate.
The other part was like, you like Bundy Aki, do you? You like him? You like James Lowe, do you?
You like him, do you?
You like Jameson Gibson Park, do you? You like Joey Carberry, born in New Zealand, but of Irish parents, do you?
Right, we'll move on then, because it is back to the URC, the best league in the world. And we have the first round kicking off on Saturday. I think we'll start the order in this in how the teams finished last season. So we'll start with the main event, Munster.
Well, the number one team, you mean? The champion
number
team.
One team, champions team.
Is that the current reigning, defending URC world champions, you would say?
It's actually great that you start with Munster, because seeing as I'm so deranged and biased, I can just do Munster and hop off nice and early. So
I won't hop off, but I'm going to mentally check out for the rest of it.
So Munster were URC champions last season, fifth reigning in the table.
Defending
champions this year.
URC world champions, because remember, there's two hemispheres involved here.
World champions. Right, we'll go with that. So they're, I suppose, the main signings this year. They've got John Ryan back, Nankerville.
He's actually a really interesting player, him. He's actually Irish qualified.
John Ryan?
Yeah, John Ryan. He was born in Cork.
No.
Weirdly enough. Yeah, he's coming in from the Chiefs.
That is a coup and a half.
Weird one.
The Irish few must be, like, absolutely chuffed a bit.
I know. It's amazing. Like, a guy called John Ryan, it's like, of course, he must be Irish.
Unlike that,
and he is.
Unlike Seamus Hurley Langton, who's
disgracefully not Irish qualified.
Connacht dropped the ball on that one, didn't they? Didn't even check the passport. They were just like,
I reckon they got the wrong Seamus Hurley length, but they were looking for the back, the speedy outside back.
It's like, how is he not Irish qualified? Seamus Langston, which again is kind of Irish. Hurley
Langston, yeah.
Come on.
Guys. Stop it.
Right. So in terms then of the outgoings, Fekitoa's gone, Ben Healy's gone to Scotland.
You forgot to mention the Nank.
No, I said Nank.
Did you say the Nank?
Yeah, John Ryan, Nankerville, and Sean O'Brien as the signings. It's on the notes that I sent around earlier.
I read them. I must say,
I literally.
So yeah. If anyone has voted on that poll on Twitter,
I guarantee that I have more homework done than anyone. let me rephrase that. I guarantee that I've more work than Owen done.
Tom
is a sure bet.
Like, to the point where I wasn't even listening when you mentioned that exactly.
Yeah. Didn't read it, not listening. Oh. That's the level of interest here, folks.
In a minute, you're gonna ask Tom a question in a minute, and he's just gonna be like, "Oh, were you talking to me there?"
Sorry, what was that about New Zealand again?
Let's be like in that episode of Simpsons where, like, you just paint my eyes over my glasses. And I'm just like
in jury duty.
I like the one. What is it? The witness protection.
He's talking to you.
Talking to you.
I'll do
Hello,
that.
Now, Mr. Thompson.
When Owen asks Tom a question, I'll just go, Tom.
Oh God.
You'd know it's late.
Yeah, you would. What you call it? Ben Healy, Fekitoa are gone, and Keith Earls has just announced his retirement. Tom, you had a lovely post put up on him. Keith Earls.
Oh yes. I actually wasn't even joking there. My fiance just sent me a picture of the baby from earlier, and I was like literally looking at it. I was like, he's not going to come to me again.
Not so soon after I told him I'm not listening.
Yeah, no, love the thing about Keith Earls. Like, it was mad because the way it was announced by Andy Farrell was just so, oh yeah, Keith Earls is returning as well. You know, on Saturday night, it was like, wait, what? It's like that had been, you know, you might assume it, but you know, you'd imagine it to be kind of, you know, flagged a bit more, you know. But yeah, I wrote a nice article on him that I kind of got it out there yesterday. Mad reaction to it because a few of my subscribers were saying, "Here, put it out there for everybody to read." So I did that this morning, and
I must have missed that.
Mad, yeah.
Will you send it to me?
I will.
Thank you. I will read it.
It's the reaction was really, really good, and because as I was writing, it was just like, I've seen he's one of those guys who, he's from the sort of the old age of Munster, but he's in the new age as well, and he's the link between that and
Keith,
this.
Keith Earls transcends age.
That's it, you know, and like. As I was writing the thing, I kind of realized just how good this guy is, because when he broke through, like, wingers were there to finish and make last-ditch tackles. Like, that's what wingers were doing when Keith Earls broke through in 2007, right?
How old Keith Earls is. Keith Earls played in the same... I don't think he played in the same team. I don't think they were on the pitch together, but they were named in the same squads. Christian Cullen.
Oh, my God.
For Munster. That's how.
When you think now,
it is.
What wingers have to do in the modern age, where they have to be offensive breakdown specialists, they have to be tactical kickers, they have to be able to, you know, slot in at first receiver and handle like a fly half. Now they have to kind of work almost like where they're attacking in the line, like midfielders as well. So it's not just, they're not just sticking on the wing, they have to defend. Like a fullback, they have to defend like an outside center. They've got to be defensive jackal threat. It's so complicated. But Keith Earls was still outstanding this year. at 35. And when he broke through, you couldn't have told him what, oh, in 2023, there'll be flying cars and jetpacks, and oh, wingers will now be tactical kickers. You have to defend a thing called a box kick. He's like, what the fuck is a box kick? And it's like, this guy is outstanding. For him to get, you know, to be that guy in 2023, still playing really high level stuff even earlier this year. And like, from where he started to now, and to go through all the evolutions of the game that have been there since then, is genuinely amazing. And it's like, just seeing, just think, looking back at that, some of the tries he scored, some of the moments he had at Munster and in Ireland, just amazing. Just really just a very, very special player who has a special place in people's hearts, I think, certainly in Munster and in Ireland, I imagine, as well. But I can only really talk about Munster. Yeah, it's sad to see him go, but at the same time, what a career.
Amazing career, really. As I say, going back a long, long time.
A lot of it.
So did Christian Cullen at the time as well.
Yeah, and I remember thinking, like, oh, like Christian Cullen was kind of, he'd phased out at that time. And like, I remember thinking, like, when Keith Earls broke through, like in 2008, in 2009,
would have been around, like, because he was a year ahead of me, and I remember not a year ahead of breaking ahead of me. Sorry, I meant in school.
Remember that time Jeff got onto the bench for the Heineken Cup final?
And he was a year ahead of me in school, not a year ahead of me of breaking through or anything like that. I am still in the process of breaking through.
We're still working on it.
Hoping it happens.
We're in the lab.
Yeah, I'm hoping it happens this season now. Put in a big pre-season.
Let him cook.
I didn't get the shout for this weekend yet, but like, you know, it's there.
You look at him and you go, like, how is it possible for this guy? Because remember, at the time, Munster were buying in guys like that. So you buy in the likes of Christian Cullen, you'd sign Doug Howlett.
Dougie Howlett, yeah.
Fellas like that, or Rua Tupoki or Lefemi Mafia or whatever it is. Because Munster mainly produced forwards or halfbacks or rock-solid fullbacks, right? When Keith Earls broke through, all of a sudden it's like, wait, is this a Christian Cullen regen? Do you know? Like, he has all the pace, he has all the skill, he's like, do you know, a guy who you would sign in, but he's like from, do you know, over the road, Moira's, like. And it's like, how, like, that's when he broke through, it was just like, oh my God, this guy is so fucking brilliant. And to think he's still playing, or he'd be still playing in 2023, that's so rare for guys to break through like that and to still be, to be playing to a very high level this year. Is just, it's amazing.
So the Sharks game.
Munster versus the Sharks. Yeah, Saturday evening. I'm going to the game, actually.
Oh, very nice. This will be the fourth occasion that they meet, you know, after the first being in September 2021, which they won, and the other two then over in Durban, you know, Sharks winning one and the other being a 22-all draw. But listen, it's not homework for me. It'll be a good test for John Plumtree, you know, new head coach after coming in.
I was very aware that John Plumtree was the new head coach. I knew that.
Yeah, it'll be his first URC game since he was at Swansea in September 2001.
I was aware
of that as well, were you?
I was just aware. I'm true osmosis. You just picked that up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what's great about the Sharks is that I know they beat Munster in the Champions Cup there, but they've never actually beaten them in the URC, which is great. They've only beaten two provinces and both of them in Durban in April 2022, you know, those Leinster and Connacht games. So I'm giving Munster a good shot in this home
they're
game.
They're also not real Sharks.
Excuse me?
They're not real Sharks.
What do you mean they're not real Sharks? They're Hollywood Sharks.
They're Hollywood bit Sharks. They're not real Sharks.
If they're Hollywood Sharks, are they AI generated?
I thought Hollywood Bet was like a type of shark, like the great white or the hammerhead.
Yeah, but like, again, sharks have fins, no hands, useless at handling, can't kick the ball, no legs.
Yeah, you see, I was thinking this, right? So you're telling me they're just people called sharks?
People called the sharks. You imagine a shark on land? I'd be laughing at that shark. It's like, you idiot, what are you doing here?
And is all their name shark? Or do they have different names as well?
No, I think there's a hammerhead guy. I'm not even sure. I haven't done much homework on these guys.
Does John Plumtree know this?
I assume he does. He's been at places like Swansea and stuff for many years. So I assume he knows all about this.
This is okay. Ignore my homework.
I'm going to this game.
Now it makes no sense.
I'm rocking up to Thomond Park for this game. I'm looking forward to it.
Are you paying for it?
No.
No.
Chance. I love Munster. I just won't financially support
them.
Metaphorically, I'll be standing up and punching the air above the press box as well. That's what I'm there for. I'm a cheerleader of sorts, digital mascot.
Right. I think we need to bring this back on track a little bit here. So for Munster for the season, they've got the Sharks this week starting out in the Champions Cup. They've got Bayonne at home, Exeter away, Toulon away, and Saints at home. If we're to start with the season predictions, what do we reckon for Munster? First,
predictions
the...
or expectations?
Predictions is a big one, considering a ball hasn't been kicked this season.
Yeah, predictions.
Munster are going to win it all.
Oh, there's a difference between this and that. Just get your predictions in.
And still.
And still. So where do you think they'll finish their league position in the table, and where do you think overall within the URC?
I think they'll finish URC. I think they'll finish somewhere, definitely in the top 12 anyway. So I won't be wrong come the end of...
I'm going to say Munster definitely will improve on last season from a league position standpoint. I would say top three.
Top four, top three. Yeah.
Would be pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think they'll necessarily get first or second, but I think they'll be good enough to get third or fourth. And I think it's hard enough to defend a title. And I would say realistically, a semi-final might be
a home quarterfinal and maybe even squeak a home semi-final, they should get to a final.
Yeah, I think that I was actually asked the exact same question there before. And my answer was, if they're competing in the business end of Europe, but a semi-final and competing in that semi-final, not like the quarter-final we saw against Ulster 2 years ago, if you get me, properly competing in that semi-final. Like Tom said it there, it's hard to defend the title. Or was that Owen? Sorry, I stopped.
I was on today.
how many talking I was listening? Mostly. It is difficult to go two in a row. But as long, I think, as they are properly competing in the late stages of the URC and certainly the knockouts of Europe, I think fans can be relatively pleased. Yeah, like obviously a fucking trophy would be fantastic. Just win all your games, you know, it's as easy as that. But
every one of them, the knockout games, league games, everything.
Every last one. The knockout games, especially, as we found out.
That's the thing. I think we saw last year that, like, just get into a position. You don't need to win every game, but just get into a position where you can get yourself home games at the end, which would ideally be easier. And like, your knockout games are just the most important thing. Obviously, I think I that sounds like a truism, but like, I think it actually is worth saying that, like, league play gets you into position, but like, it's all about knockout rugby.
I think the only thing for me is Munster have a very difficult start to the season. If you look at the draw, I think they played the top four from last season in the league, and they play Ulster and Leinster both away, I think, is it? In the opening matches.
As a caveat to that, though, Connacht had that last year.
Yeah.
They had a horrible start, and then as the business end of the season rocked around, they're picking up, you know, BP wins here, a win there, etc. And suddenly their points tally looked very handsome heading into the last couple of rounds.
And I think Munster could do something. I think if Munster have a good start to the season, it could really snowball. I think you can build the momentum from there, because the fixtures that they have in the Champions Cup, there's a real chance to win sort of three of those and potentially get a home sort of draw going into the knockouts there. I think for the Champions Cup, for me, I think I've said this before, I still think they're a tier two team in that competition. I don't think they have the front row to compete at the very top level.
Your tier one teams would be like Leinster, La Rochelle.
Yeah.
That's probably a fair comment at the moment.
Yeah.
I'd say that'd be pretty fair. Yeah. I think Munster on their day could probably rattle, maybe you give them a rattle, those three teams, but I wouldn't say it'd be something we'd say light work, easy win for Munster there.
And that's where something like a home draw could make a big difference something like that. And I think a semi-final. I think semi-finals in both the URC and Champions Cup could be a decent season.
I'd be relatively happy with that.
And just continue the progress. Where else do you think, or what do you guys think on the Champions Cup?
I think semi-final would be tidy enough.
And then two questions, I suppose. The player that the Munster will be most dependent on this season, and a player to watch out for.
I think given Klein and Snyman both at World Cup duty currently, I'd stick down a second row somewhere in there. Like in a Dogbo or in a Hearn, maybe. Just because these guys while they're still playing, they'll need a rest, etc., etc. So I'd stick a second row maybe in there at the moment. What was the second question?
Player to watch out for.
I'd also go for one of those second rows.
Mm-hmm. You're a Dogbo. Massive season for Thomas O'Hearn. Massive. If he can stay fit, it'll be huge, because I think he's such a talented player. But staying fit is the big thing. He missed last season after a shoulder injury. He suffered against Leinster in the last 2 minutes of the game, something like that. And he'd been playing really well up until that point. He's put on great size. He's listed around 119 kg now. So big guy. I think Ireland needs athletes like that in the second row. He fits the bill. So it's a big season for him to kind of put a marker down, especially with, you know, the likes of Snyman and Klein, you know, impending contract discussions there with those two.
Ahern is listed as 119 at the moment.
119, yeah. They updated the heights on the Munster Rugby website. I know this. Yeah.
He's 6'8", 119.
6'8". He was listed as 6'9". Now he's 6'8". Finian Witcherly was listed as 6'4" for his entire time in the academy in the last couple of years. Now he's 6'5".
Yeah, 6'5", yeah.
Yeah, and Eben Adogbo is 6'6" now. He was 6'5" last season, now he's 6'6".
Still growing.
Big guy.
For me, the player the team is most dependent on, I'm going to go for Joey Carberry for that, because I think Crowley is going to be rested after, obviously, take time off after the World Cup. He's probably going to be involved in the Six Nations as well. And could be out for a good bit of that. So I think Munster are going to rely, not necessarily in the big games, but I think for a lot of the URC season, they could be relying on Carberry coming through and refining his form. And a player to watch out for, Andrew Conway.
Oh, he's back. He's fully training, isn't he?
He's back and training. He had a bit of a hand injury, so I'm not sure if he'll be available for the Sharks game or not. But I think overall for the season, he missed pretty much all of last season, I think, wasn't it? I think his style, his skill set could really suit what Prendergast wants in attack. Like the way he trails and tracks runs around the centres, and just runs the lines off those. I think he could be fantastic in the Munster attacking system, and would be like getting a new player. And particularly with Earl's gone, I think he can play a big role for Munster this season as well. We'll move on then to Leinster.
Right, I'm off.
They made it to the URC semi-final last year. I can't remember who beat them in that. That was a strange one. But they did finish, obviously, top of the league. And in the Champions Cup, they lost out in the final to La Rochelle. This season in the Champions Cup, the draw has really, like, Munster got a fairly nice draw because of the seeding and being URC champions. It really impacted Leinster. They've got
reigning, defending world champions.
And still.
La Rochelle away, Sale home, Stade Francais home, and Tigers away.
La Rochelle away, first up, is a fucking nightmare.
That's
it's literally like, it's like the ERC are like, who would you not like and where? And then you tell them, they're like, well, that's who you have.
That's who you have. We probably ideally wouldn't be playing La Rochelle away. It's like, wait a minute. Are we playing La Rochelle away? First off.
So that's it. After all this time, goodbye. Good luck. I don't recall saying good luck.
Did someone say skeleton?
But yeah, I think it is. It'll be a good thing for Leinster though. Because I think that they've waltzed through the pools in the last couple of years. And I'm not sure they've been any better for it. They've got some tasty games this time around.
They have. I suppose it's the same thing in the URC for the last two seasons. They've absolutely waltzed the league. They've done the same, as you said, in the pools for the Champions Cup. And it's only when it gets to the end of April, sort of May, that things start getting interesting. And they're really challenged. I think, yeah, I'd fancy them to win three of those games at least. Still at this point, but
I'd say so. Like I think like Leinster will, like, there will be a bit of a hangover from the World Cup just because they had so many guys who were involved in the World Cup. But I still expect Leinster to be there thereabouts, like contesting the final. You can imagine in both tournaments next year. I'd be shocked if they weren't.
Who's going to bring it up? Is it going to be me?
Yeah, it's going to have to be you, I'd say.
Yeah.
Who's their 10?
Ross Byrne.
Is Ross Byrne a Champions Cup winning 10?
Well, I mean, literally no. But could he be?
Shit.
Could he be?
That sounds like I teed that up to be really mean, but I absolutely didn't. Sorry.
But you hate Leinster. You spoke about this beforehand.
If anything, that worked out lovely. I didn't mean it that way. Sorry.
I think if it's Ross's team built around Ross, then I'm sure he could be.
New head coach.
I'm sure he could be.
Well, is he actually the head coach?
New coach.
Senior assistant coach, regional manager, whatever it is.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the big things. He is the only big signing.
Jacques Nienaber. Yeah. I have a feeling they'll try and bring somebody else in mid-season. Or announce early for next year. Somebody.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know why, but call it a sneaky...
When you get a new coach in like that, like they give them new toys to work with as well. That's typically what they do.
Is he going to be the head coach running it? Is he going to direct Goodman in terms of attack, or is he just going to be responsible for defense with sort of Cullen still pulling all the strings?
I have to back my fellow Eggman here and say that Jacques is probably going to be more important than what people think. I think he's going to be, and it's a tough gig to replace what Stuart Lancaster was, but I think he's going to take over that role like for like almost. And run the attack, not run the attack, but like as in, it'll be, he will direct how that team will play. Okay. With Leo Cullen being the Mr. Motivator, selector, director of rugby almost.
Looking at this Glasgow game though, who are we going for? I'm certainly going for Leinster.
Is it away from home?
Away from home
on Sunday afternoon. Yeah,
it'd be a tough one.
I don't know. Leinster lost just one of their last nine fixtures against the Warriors.
I have to do that.
And Glasgow have lost every opening round for the last 4 years.
I don't. You know, this is really two teams that I don't like. I'm not going to hold
that. That's typical you now.
That is typical.
That's typical you.
No, don't like either team typically. And Glasgow, I don't imagine they're going to necessarily have too many of their internationals back for it. Leinster, the same. Leinster have better depth, I think, in it. And for me, should be able to take that as an away win.
I'm going to go with a 10-point Leinster win.
With a Leinster win too. Yeah,
probably. Right. Then same thing.
I also know that the fact that Keith Earls was lamented for so long and nobody lamented Sexton for the same amount of time, there, like, I can already feel the backlash coming tomorrow.
It's an awful pity that Johnny Sexton retired. He was a very good player. A generational talent, you might say.
Thanks for that, Tom. Over to you, Owen.
Fabulous player.
Fabulous player. And that is, fabulous, like, yeah. we don't say fabulous player lightly.
No, absolutely. Unbelievable player. Fabulous. What other word do you have?
Yeah, I think so. In terms of the season prediction, same thing that we did then for Munster.
They need a trophy, yeah. So
which one are they getting?
Which one do you think they'll win? Either one of them. If they want to go, if they prioritize the URC, I think that'll be tough to stop. Until, but again, if they're thereabouts in Europe as well, the fifth star, it'd be a hard one to go. It's a hard one to turn down.
I think they've lost two semifinals.
Actually, managing the squad would be big too.
Two semifinals and two finals by what? A total of is it 4
points or something? Oh, 10 points, I think.
Fewer, I think. I think it's like 6, isn't it?
Not far away.
But they need
a trophy for sure.
They need a trophy, I think.
Because two years can turn into 4 years very easily. Then
it does. You just add 2 more years.
And then it's a monkey on your back.
Last week we talked about my very good concept of time.
Big strong point.
I've just shown it there again. So 2 years to make it 4 years, you just add 2 more years. And that goes with anything for if you have two of something, you just add.
If I have two shaving brushes.
Yeah.
You want and I four. Get two more.
Oh, you have four, yeah. You're sorted.
That doesn't equal 4 years. I'll just say that.
Equal four shaving equals two shaving brushes.
Yeah. Okay. You're done. You don't need to do anything else then.
Brilliant.
Yeah, you're all good.
Well, excellent.
Yeah. So URC, I think they'll finish again. I think they'll finish top of the league.
Fair.
Pick up the dub cap interprovincial championship again.
Yeah. Which is changing, I think, isn't it? Isn't the
now it's just counts for the games you play against your shield rivals rather
like
than
it's like an inter pro type.
Yeah. Racking up a handy 5 points every time you play Zebra or whatever.
And obviously
speaking of Zebra. I'm only joking.
And then obviously the European positions goes to the straight out qualifiers rather than
unless you win it and then finish outside the top 8.
Can't happen.
No, like if this season in Europe, let's say for example Munster won.
Oh, you mean win the Champions Cup?
Yeah.
Well, sorry, I thought you meant the league. I was going, you can't get into the top 8 or can't.
Oh no, sorry, no. That's not what I meant today. Yeah. That's not what I meant, but I don't think you were listening to me.
Probably not. Right then, for Leinster, who do you think is going to be their most the player they are most dependent on and the player to watch out for?
Gary Ringrose.
Yeah.
To watch out for. I think he's a really good talent. I think he'll break through maybe this year.
Jack Boyle.
That's a great shout.
Yeah. That is actually a very good shout. I think
the young man is looking like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
I think with Cian Healy.
Yeah, he's a man. Did you ever see like his back? Like
Jack Boyle's back.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like a ninja turtle.
I don't know if the listeners can see me right now, but the angle I'm making with my hands, like, it's enormous.
The shell that you're doing.
I don't know why I then made a shell. Listeners can't see this. But
they never see it.
This is just quality podcasting. That's quality podcasting.
We move on to Ulster.
Connacht.
Oh, I am mad.
Connacht actually made it to a semi-final last year in the URC. Finished 7th in the league table, but did make the semi-final. They got to the quarter-final in the what I like to refer to as the Parker Penn Shield.
They threw it away.
Threw it away. They did. Absolutely threw it away. This year, they are qualified, obviously, though, for the Champions Cup, where they have Bordeaux at home, Saracens away, Lyon away, and Bristol at home. Tricky pool games.
The Bristol one is going to be the ultimate Speedybacks game.
Ultimate run game.
Yeah. Whatever the over is on the points with the bookies, just back it. On that. See, I'm looking at bewilderment on the faces of you two guys for that.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. So, sorry, say it again. I know what to do this time. Say it again. Now that I know it's a joke, I know how to react.
Whatever the over is on that, just back it.
That's excellent.
Overs. Overs. Overs.
Signings
wise.
Read.
I think he's talking to you.
Signings wise, they have Joe Joyce, Sean Jansen, Santiago Cordero, who is now injured. I don't know how long he's out for. I think it's long term, isn't it?
It's a long while, yeah.
Is it the full season?
Oh my days.
Well, if it's a serious knee,
Tom keeps coming in and out.
Tom needs to put another euro into the Wi-Fi box there. They also have JJ Hanrahan. Pete Wilkins got promoted to senior coach, and they also have too many speedy outside backs to name individually.
Scott Fardy is defensive as well, isn't he?
Yep, Scott Fardy is in. And then in terms of those who've left, Andy Friend, or Andy Enemy, as we like to call him here, is gone. Della Hunt, Fafita, Kieran Marmion, Conor Fitzgerald, Adam Byrne, and Alex Wooten, all gone. So I think plenty of change, but I do fancy Connacht continue on their progress this season.
Yeah, I think that their signings this year, especially JJ Hanrahan, people might see him as a bit of a journeyman or whatever, and I can understand that rationale, etc. But I think I said this last year as well, as a number 10 and as a backup number 10, I think he's going to offer an awful lot more solidity than Fitzgerald did, to be perfectly honest with you. You look at even JJ last year, with the Dragons, kicked 29 out of 37, it's just slightly under the 80%, but in his all-round gameplay as well, I think he just offers more of maybe what Connacht need at times in that kind of steering the game. In terms of kind of just making sure that they're playing in the right areas of the pitch, etc., and bossing a forward pack, just that small bit more maybe than Fitzgerald did. So I actually think that JJ Hanrahan could be an unbelievable signing this year, just in giving him that extra help at 10, which I don't mean to knock Fitzgerald, but I just think he's a better 10 than Fitzgerald.
I think with Hanrahan, Carty, and Hawkshaw, they've a lovely trio there that they can rotate and sort of into that 10-12 position, depending on the opposition.
I was about to say, I think I'd be very surprised to see Hawkshaw start as many games at 10 maybe instead of 12. If I know they've Tom Daly and Farrell plays. Farrell was unbelievable there last season. But I just think that they'll want to continue maybe his progress at 12 that little bit, especially now if they've a more solid sub-10 option, maybe. And again, I'm a big fan of having a kicking 10-12 axis. I think once you have that, you're in business, really. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do it anyway this season. But ultimately, I just think he's probably it sounds strange saying that I don't think they'll be dependent on him. And I feel strange saying he's probably the one to watch, considering he's not, a young up-and-coming player, etc. But I just think he will do a good job for them.
Yeah, I think so. Moving on then to the season predictions. They have URC 7th last season. Do you think they can improve on that?
I think so. I don't think they'll finish top 4 or anything. I think they'll finish top 8. I think they'll get knockout rugby in URC. I think this having a straight shot to top 8 probably helps them a bit as well. Having to guarantee a top 7 finish last year is a lot of pressure because of that Welsh side. Obviously, it was a Cardiff took that 8th spot, even though they finished, was it 9th or 10th? But I think that it's going to do Connacht maybe. It's going to do, I think, all the Irish provinces a bit of a favour as well. Maybe not Leinster. I think Leinster will finish top of the table, etc. But it just offers that bit of, how would you say, a bit of cushion. But yeah, I think Champions Cup wise, listen, the last Champions Cup they were in, if I'm correct, was the one where they got to the round of 16. They'd only won one game. So while it was their aim to get to the knockouts, ultimately, it was a bit like Ulster last year in Champions Cup. They got to knockouts, but you only won one game. Like, is that really competing? I don't think it is, to be honest with you.
I don't think it is, but I think they've got a better squad. They've got a lot of youngsters who are going to have to prove themselves, I think, this season for them to have that depth that they need. I agree with you. I think they can finish fifth or sixth. I don't think they'll get a home quarterfinal in the URC.
I don't think so, yeah.
And it'll depend on who they draw then with that, but whether they go further than the quarterfinal there. I think they're going to go probably round of 16 in the Champions Cup. I can see them getting one win and maybe a bonus point or two somewhere along the line to allow them to do that. In terms of who they're most dependent on, I still think it's Carty.
Oh, Jack Carty.
To a degree.
Yeah. Up there, maybe Ian Prendergast, maybe to a degree as well.
Niall Murray as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a good shout, actually. He had more steals than some teams combined last year.
Yeah, at line out, which gives them a huge weapon. And player to watch out for, I think JJ. I think he can add, as we talked about there, I think he can add an awful lot to them this year. And whether that's a 10 or 12 or, you know, he can offer them. I think they're going to see less and less of Bundy this year. Not that he played an awful lot last year either, mind you. But I think having someone like JJ there, as well as the other centres, it means that Bundy will maybe play. I'd be surprised if you see Bundy for more than 5 or 6 URC games for the season.
Yeah, I think so as well, to be honest. I think so as well. He'll be Europe. But I suppose looking at this game this weekend for the Ospreys, I think Connacht will win it. Looking at the Ospreys, they haven't lost round one in 4 years either. But
yeah, Welsh rugby is in such a bad state. The Ospreys under Booth they're a very good set piece side, which can cause Connacht a bit of problems.
More scrum penalties than anyone last year.
Yeah, I think they'll cause Connacht problems. Connacht at home, I'd still fancy them to win though.
Yeah, but like Ospreys last year only had 5 wins. Like, they had 11 bonus points but only 5 wins. They only won 2 away from home. I don't know, can a whole season turn on pre-season when you're missing your, well, how many Welsh players are missing? One second now. I think it'd be fair to say that national selection hurt Ospreys more than Connacht.
Yeah.
So I think Connacht will just be too strong for them, to be honest with you. They've only lost once in the last 6 games, you know, and that was back in January 2021 behind closed doors. So I don't know. I just think that Connacht will have too much for them, to be honest with you. And that probably, especially being at home, Galway in October to play that old, cliche card? I just think that Connacht will have enough for them, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Flat out, we'll just have enough for them. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the speedy backs.
Hello to all the speedy backs. Moving on then to Ulster, who had, like, if you look at the facts, the details of it, you know, it was a strange, they finished second in the league. Okay, they got knocked out in the quarterfinals, but like second in the league is still a very good season for nearly every team. And then you've got, you know, they got to the round of 16, now somewhat luckily in terms of the Champions Cup, but that's a decent season for most teams. But for Ulster, it was such a mixed season, up and down in terms of results. there seemed to be a lot of, I'm not going to call it unrest, but within the squad or anything like that, but there doesn't seem to have been the sort of what's the word I'm searching for?
Cohesion
between the players and the tactics and the management and where everything was going. There was nothing there. There didn't seem to be a common viewpoint on it all. And I'm looking at the signings that they've got. Like they've signed Kitsoff and Ewers.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
And like that's they're really good signings. But to me, you look at who's gone. So you've lost Tamuga Allen, Rory Sutherland, Milinezic. I can't even pronounce his name. Milinezic. No,
Nailed it.
Sam Carter, Dwayne Vermeulen, Jordy Murphy, Ian Madigan, Craig Gilroy, and a couple of others.
Yeah,
they've really trimmed down the squad. They're going all in for this, and it's almost like a few injuries could really, really derail their season.
Yeah, that was a big thing for me. Sorry if my sound quality changed. Just I had to plug out the mic and use the headphones. But that was a big thing for me when I saw their signings, like exiting and incoming. Like there's a huge raft of players leaving and two coming in. So I suppose we'll probably see it a lot with the Welsh teams as well in terms of squad size and trying to manage that too. But it'll be an interesting one for Ulster. In terms of their season last year, yeah, ups and downs. I would still class it as a failure last year, to be honest, for two reasons. First off, getting to the knockouts in Europe, yeah, that's fine. But as we mentioned, it was off the back of one game, one win. Like, and you look at their European season with the Snowgate, I suppose, having to be moved to the Aviva. You look at their away game to the Sharks and how, am I right in saying something like on the day of the game at like 12 o'clock or 11 o'clock, they were still in Belfast or something. I know their travel that day as well was up the wall as well, but you just look at their Champions Cup season, it was kind of over before it began. And then you can talk about the URC and you can say, well, hang on, they got to semi-final again, or a quarter-final against Connacht, but ultimately didn't fire a shot. Connacht took that win really, really well. They played really gutsy rugby, but if you go back and watch that, Ulster's attack didn't fire a shot in that game. So, I mean, that's also disappointing to get that far, to put yourself in a position where you have the home quarter and you would have had the home semi, and you're against a team that you know as well as Connacht, and you fail to fire a shot. So, I mean, you look at the way that ended, very disappointing, absolutely very disappointing.
I think the start of this season is going to be really important for Ulster. I think if they get off to a good start, they have they can build momentum.
Good news for you.
Hello, my friend.
They have Zebre.
They have that. They have Zebre away on Saturday. I think like that's the best chance you have for it. One of the things in terms of that start that I wonder will it impact it is, they've obviously moved to the, is it a, well,
4G,
to the,
yeah, or the 5G or whatever it is, yeah. The artificial pitch. Yeah.
Artificial pitch, which may take a little bit of getting used to even for their own players. It may not be quite the same that they're used to. And will that even things out in terms of home advantage, at least early in the season?
Yeah, I said the same, I think, when they announced they were putting it in. Like, Ulster play a heavy game and they're getting an artificial pitch. Like Connacht's got an artificial pitch, makes perfect sense. If anything, I question why they didn't do it sooner. But like Ulster getting an artificial pitch, I'm a bit like, well, you play fucking so heavy off nine. It's incredible. Like, and if you're going to double down on that and continue to do so, that's a lot of juddering, I suppose, for want of a better verb for your forwards.
Yeah, like I think if you take that into account, you've got new pitch there, you've got a reduced squad, you've potentially coming off the back of a shaky end to last season. There's a lot of uncertainty there with Ulster for the start of the season. Zebra is going to be a big one. Look, I think we're both going for an Ulster win in that.
Are we?
But well, I am. Because I have no respect.
Absolutely joking.
But I would say if it's not totally convincing, it's sort of again.
Yeah, I don't know about convincing, to be honest. Like, I do think they'll win, and I think they'll win well. Like, Ulster have not lost the opening game of the season in 10 years. Zebra have not beaten them since 2017. And even at that fact, I was surprised that Zebra have beaten Ulster twice in Parma, 2014 and 2017. That really surprised me. But you know, you're not surprised to hear that because you've clearly done your homework as well, etc. But I wouldn't be surprised, or like, I wouldn't be, if I was an Ulster fan and Ulster failed to put 60 on them. Like, if they won well, like, it's still the first game of the season. Like, you're figuring stuff out, etc. Like, in fairness to Ulster, they've released a lot of players, only brought two in. So it's not like those guys have to get up to speed immediately. I mean, Kitchoff isn't even there. He's still in France. So, like, the Ulster players will know the game plan, etc., and a few tweaks, etc., that's brought in. But ultimately, it's still the first game of the season. You know, it's you had your preseason games, but preseason games they're what they are. You know, they're hitouts. They're just preseason games. So, I think Ulster will win well. I mean, Zebra only have one win in the URC so far in the last two seasons. Dragons in 2022. Aside from that, they've actually not had any URC wins. So I certainly do not see them changing that this weekend with Ulster going across. But if it's not a 60-70 point victory, I wouldn't be throwing the toys out of the pram and saying the season's fucked already. Like, I mean, there's plenty of...
No, I don't think it needs to be that. I think that they've got to look for their part, make sure it's not a tight game. You know, you're not looking at sort of a 10 or a 15 point game. I think for me. In terms of the season predictions now for Ulster, URC position, and where do you think they'll finish up?
I'd say, what do you think? Like we said it last year, like, when are they going to get a trophy? Like, you look at the squad, you can look at last year, etc. It's a brilliant squad. It's still a very, very good team. When are they going to get a trophy? Is a trophy, not getting a trophy again this year, is that a sign of, you know, derailment? But
I think Ulster are in what we call win now territory. It was the same last season. I think they have to get a trophy somewhere. I think one of their big problems could be that Leinster are in the same position and could concentrate on the URC, which may take that option away from them. And like, you look at Ulster's Champions Cup. They've Bath away, who look to be coming somewhat strong. Racing at home, Toulouse at home, and Quinns away. That's a tough group.
Yeah, that is a tough group. And Quinns, I think Quinns will be a bad matchup for them as well. Like.
Yeah, there's the part of that, you know. Hopefully, you might catch Racing on a sort of a transition under Lancaster or something like that. Away from home, you know, or maybe, you know, Nick Bath away, something like that. You know, two wins should be enough to see you out. But I think you need sort of 3 to 4 wins to get that sort of home for the round of 16 and the quarterfinals. So that puts you in a difficult position. Again, like Munster, I think they're in tier two of the Champions Cup.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think just think overall, it would be a huge stretch for them to win that. So I think they've got to go almost all in on the URC for it. And I'm not sure they have the squad this season to do it. I'm not sure they'll end up with the depth. They will have to, I think, have an awful lot of luck in terms of injury and avoiding injury in certain key areas.
Yeah.
And I think one of those is going to be tight head prop. Because you're looking at tight head prop at the moment, I think, is Tom O'Toole at the top end, who will probably be away with Ireland squads.
Yeah.
You've Marty Moore, who's currently injured, and you've James French.
Yeah. Jeez, that is light when you put it that way.
And after that, I think you're going down to sort of like Academy or effectively AIL props.
Oof.
So from that basis, I think the player that the team is most dependent on is going to be Marty Moore. I think they need him fit and playing for as much of the season as they can.
Do you reckon that they'll give another 10 a chance? Or do you think that Billy Burns will play every single minute of every single game from now until he retires?
Billy Burns is the equivalent of Sexton with Ireland. They are all in on him. Yeah. And until he is carried off the pitch,
As long as he has two legs, he's playing.
Yeah. And even then, they may put Doak into 10.
Yeah. I don't know. Flannery got a run there pre-season at 10.
That's probably contractual now that he gets his minutes in early in the season.
Yeah, fuck, who knows?
And that's purely based on the way Ulster have been picking the number 10. I think Flannery could play really well for Ulster.
I think
one of the big things that Ulster need is they need to find that link between their forward play and their back play, which I think disappeared last season. They have some fantastic backs with the likes of McCluskey and Hume and Lowry, etc. in there. They also have some really good backs coming through with the likes of Postlethwaite and others there. But they can't seem to marry the style of play between playing heavy off nine and then releasing the backs when they need to.
Yeah. And in fairness, if they do manage to marry that, they'd be in a very good place. Like when you think about it, you look at be it Doak or Cooney, Billy Burns, McCluskey, Hume, Balakoon, Mike Lowry. You look at the pack they have, like a full pack, let's say, Tom Stewart / Herring, Kitchoff, O'Toole, Henderson, I'm probably missing a very obvious second one now that I can't think of.
Sheridan seems to be doing well coming through at the moment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Timoney,
etc. Like, it's a very, very, if they can nail it, so both those styles of play complement each other week in, week out, it'd be a very tough unit to stop.
Totally. And it's trying to get that and find the balance, get that working for them. They fail to do that. If they can get it going, you know, that's the reason why they start finishing sort of second towards the top end of the table, and they can suddenly be a challenge for anyone in knockout games. But as I said, I think start of the season is going to be key for them. If they can build momentum there. If they don't, I think the doubts start coming in, and then you could possibly go to a bad place within the squad and within the team.
Yeah. But I think, this weekend, it's a nice opportunity just to settle the bet a bit. And off they go.
Ease yourself in with the Zebra preseason game.
Zero respect.
Zero respect there. We'll talk very briefly, because God knows how long this has been going on.
I actually can't believe we're still on this podcast.
Tom just gave up. His internet didn't go. He just gave up on this. He stopped listening. The women's World 15, Ireland beat Kazakhstan 109-0.
Slaughtered them.
As you called, very much.
More
than a point a minute last was what you'd said last week.
Yeah. I'd go for the same. It's Colombia this weekend, isn't it? I'd go for more or less the same. Now, obviously, we're working off without a team name. If it's as strong as the one they put out last week, much the same. I think it was actually a really good point made to me in a message from a fellow Twitter user, Patricia. I don't know the surname, sorry. Sorry, Patricia, but I'm sure you're listening. Big Monster fan.
Vieira, is it?
Could be. You were on her podcast, weren't you?
Yeah.
That's where you were cheating on us. I was talking to her and she said, when will people see that they weren't a losing team, but rather an abandoned one? And for me, it was extremely apt, extremely, extremely apt. It is not a bad team in any way, shape or form. And I'm not just saying this because they beat Kazakhstan 109-0. Like, it was as clear as day that that was going to happen. I think if anything, what last weekend showed us, and probably what this weekend shows, is that this group of players just flat out don't belong in the WXV3. It is essentially a development league, and you've got the likes of Baven Parsons like playing in that. Like, she's not a development player. I don't give a fuck who you're talking to. Like, Ireland are not a development team. They're a very good team that were left falter for too long, and now we're in a situation where they're playing teams where they put 100+ points on them. Like, it's unfair, I think, on the teams that have to face them, because, I mean, you look at Kazakhstan versus Colombia, I guarantee it's going to be an awful lot closer of a scoreline than we saw last week. But again, you just have a team running away with it and almost kind of, don't get me wrong, results got us there, and you have to recognize that. Like, but I don't think it was a lack of effort or a lack of talent that got us there, if that makes sense.
Mm. No, I think that makes perfect sense. I think, as you say, the result last week showed they shouldn't really be here, but there's very valid reasons why they are. And what they have to do is prove that they're too good for this and to move up to the next level, where I think is probably where they rightfully should be.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
And try and develop from there. Okay, I think we've rambled it on for long enough. We do have a competition. We have
for anyone two who's tickets left listening.
Yeah. This is really, if you've stayed this long, you're probably the only one. So just shoot us an email.
Just take them.
Yeah, just take them. We have two tickets to a provincial game. So one of the provinces. Send us in an email with the question being, at what point did Tom drop off this podcast?
That's a great question, because I actually didn't realize either. I think I was talking and then looked back at screen and Tom wasn't there. And I went to myself, oh, Tom is gone.
Yeah. I also we'll take it roughly. It doesn't have to be exact. Within a couple of minutes.
I also don't know. So, yeah. Can I enter if I don't know?
we'll do it from there. So we'll round it up there, folks. Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings and for supporting the podcast, for staying on this long. Please do rate and review the podcast, whatever platform you listen, as it really helps. And also be sure to share the podcast on social media. Hope you have a good week, and the three of us will be back next week to chat again.